Hello, you wonderful woman. Welcome to the Love is Coming podcast. I'm your host, Persia Lawson, one of the UK's most successful love coaches, according to the Times magazine, and author of the book, Love is Coming. It's my mission through this podcast to help single women, specifically female leaders, get powerful, soul-expanding relationships that revolutionize your growth, impact, and happiness during your time on planet Earth. Let's get straight to it. Hey everyone, welcome back. Do I have a slightly different episode in store for you today, but one that you're going to really, really enjoy? It's going to be rather titillating, I imagine. You are going to be hearing from a professional matchmaker to high-profile clients and celebrities. Some juicy stuff to come, no doubt. So Hayley Bystrom is founder and CEO of Bowsline Partnership, which is a leading matchmaking agency established 15 years ago. She's a dating expert and has featured in articles for Cosmopolitan magazine, The Guardian, The Telegraph, and various entrepreneurial publications too. So Bowsline Partnership provides a personal and bespoke service to discerning professionals who join to meet an equal partner for a committed future. With offices in Mayfair and Surrey, the agency has helped to create many long-term relationships, marriages, and even families. And Hayley and I have actually worked together and have some interesting things in common. More on that shortly. But first, hello, Hayley. How are you doing?
Hi, Persia. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. So I have to ask, I was watching the final season of The Crown over Christmas, and I discovered that the Queen Mum was actually a Bowsline. And I had never made that connection because I didn't actually know that fact. So what is the link? What is the link between your partnership and the Queen Mum? Is there one?
Well, it's a tenuous link, I'll be honest, but the name does go back in our family tree. So when I started the agency in 2009, so 15, 16 years ago, it was started by myself and my sister, and we wanted to have a family connection. And we didn't want the agency to scream dating.com. The audience that we were going for is, well, they come to us for the privacy and the discretion and the confidentiality. They want their private life to remain private. So we don't splash our members' details on the website. They're not in a lookbook. And we wanted the whole image and portrayal of the company to reflect that first and foremost. So we wanted to choose a name that, yes, it didn't sound like matchmaking, really. So we could fly under the radar and our members felt that their confidentiality was going to be protected, which it is.
I was just going to say, it's very graceful and dignified, which is not what you kind of you're used to seeing when it comes to matchmaking or dating agencies.
Yes, it's such a broad spectrum. So you've got at the lower end of it, you've got the free websites that are full of God knows what. There's no accountability.
Sugardaddies.com.
Sugardaddy.com, plenty of fish. Nothing wrong with them. No judgment. They serve a certain audience. And at the other end of the spectrum, there's us. We are a high-end boutique bespoke dating agency with a much higher price fee attached. But we all just get dumped under this dating umbrella, and dating doesn't have the best image about it. You read a lot about it online. It's always scandals and, oh my God, there's always con artists online. There is. But, you know, that makes more for interesting reading. So we wanted to steer away from that. So we didn't want to use our direct surname. We wanted something that, yes, promoted that image. So we went back in our family tree and our Scottish ancestry, and Bowsline is there. So we can use it. And it just means that our members, if they ever have our business card or they are making a payment for a membership fee, it says Bowsline. It doesn't say dating.com. And sometimes with our members, they're outsourcing. Maybe their PA is helping with some of their paperwork. It's all this, just this constant confidentiality and discretion across the board. And you're right, it does have this certain image and this certain profile that comes with it, which does lend itself to the type of clientele that we work for.
Beautiful. I love it. Very, very, just very good choice. Right. Now let's get into the really juicy stuff. So why do you think busy and successful women in particular struggle to find or hold down a great relationship? Like, why do they need a matchmaker in the first place?
So we do find we get a lot of ladies coming to us. We're always we're a team of women in the office. And we're kind of like a dating wing woman for our members in a way. That said, in recent years, we've seen such a surge of gentlemen come to us as well. I mean, we operate on a balanced portfolio. We actually operate on 60% male, 40% female, which is very different to other agencies. It's a balance that really works well for us. But in terms of ladies coming to us, what they particularly like is the safety and the security. And there is this whole... this image of online being full of predators and full of con artists. And actually, statistically, the men get caught by those more than the women do. It always seems to be stories about how women get caught. We're way more savvy than the men. And there are reports and surveys that show that as well. It's something like 5% of women and 11% of men will get targeted by con men. Anyway.
Really?
That's
fascinating. So women are statistically more con artists in the dating field?
No, women are less likely to be targeted by con artists. Men are more susceptible to being naive to it.
What an interesting fact.
Yeah. So I can't remember the report. I was reading about it last year because it changes all the time. And it's a real surge at the moment for men. But it was always quite prominent for women in the safety and the security. Who are you meeting? What kind of person is it? Do you know them? And there's no accountability online. You can say whatever you want. No one's really checking. So women do feel that security aspect about it. So that's what they really like about us. The men, the driving factor is the privacy, the discretion. The ladies' driving factor is the safety and security that we provide because we vet every single person. So I don't think it's a case of successful women have a problem. I think we are just more savvy and more aware of any obstacles, of any dangers. And yes, it's all sort of heightened by media and things like that. Those are the stories that they publish because they're interesting and scandalous. But it is a prevalent concern for ladies. They do like the fact that we are their wing woman. Not to say that women don't have groups of friends that they talk about this sort of thing with, but we're very impartial, separate from their life. We can see things as... you know, as they are, see things on face value, not in terms of having known them for 30, 40 years that their friendship circle might, not knowing their previous marriage or their previous husband. We give a really impartial view and steer them forwards to their best future.
And yeah, I guess that what you said there about taking them on face value, it's like when you're going dating, people don't know all of the context. They just see what they see. So I guess that does make a lot of sense because, you know, also when your friends know all the stuff, they might be as blind to your blind spots as you are, if that makes any sense. Whereas you're really coming with a fresh pair of eyes.
Yeah, I don't find friends are the best matchmakers. I remember, so I'm divorced myself. I'm in my mid-40s. I married very early in my early 20s. And I was divorced at 30. It was why I started the agency. And I remember my friends sort of trying to set me up and things. And I was like, oh my God, my friends either hate me or don't know me. Because why on earth would they sit me next to this person at a dinner party? And it's really odd. Your friends want the best for you. It's almost like they're so desperate. They're not looking at all the considerations. And yeah, I don't find friends are the best matchmakers.
Controversial point, but I actually kind of really hear what you're saying then, because I guess they've got, it's almost like they're too emotionally invested.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, you know, perhaps when you were last dating, we find this a lot with our members, if they'd been married, they could come to us and the last time they were dating was when they were 10, 20 years ago with their group of friends, 21 at the disco, but now they're sort of 50. It's a whole different ballgame. And they're thinking of it when they were last dating, their friends are, and they're just approaching everything with the wrong attitude and looking for the wrong criteria and the wrong type of person to fit what is needed for their future. So I think that impartiality and getting to know our members on that face value, meeting them at that present point in time and matching them with what is best for them now and for their future rather than in the past.
And one thing that, I mean, I've done some coaching sessions for some of your members, which has been a real joy. And every single one of them, pretty much without exception, has really raved about you, Hayley, and just said, you know, it's funny because it's the things that they say about you are what people tend to say about when they go on dates. It's like they just felt this connection with you and they felt like they got that, you really got them. And it's interesting how, in fact, we even ended up working together. So an old client of mine who wasn't in a great way when she was working with, when she first came to work with me. And now, like, she, you know, she was on the brink of divorce then, and now she's just had a baby with her lovely new man, and probably not so new anymore. You know, they've got a gorgeous cottage. And what I loved most, this is just for those who've been following my work for a while, because they'll enjoy this. So when I Googled where, I can't remember, I looked up the agency and I knew that you had offices near me. And then I found out where you live. And the reason I know this village where you live is because every time I've driven past it, they have these huge dinosaurs. Like, yeah. Do you know where I mean?
Yes, I do. It's just down the road from my house.
I love it. And I've got this whole thing. Anyone who follows me knows, I literally met my husband because of dinosaurs. So I just was like, okay, that's a sign from the universe. Absolutely. Yeah. And then we had a chat and I just was like, yeah, this feels really good to me. And what I discovered from my stalking of you was that, like me, you have been to a fair number of your clients' weddings. And then the more, and I love that, I'm a trained wedding celebrant. So I've actually married a few of my clients as well, right. Which has been great. But what was really interesting, the deeper I got in my stalking of you, is that you actually used to be a wedding planner. So mm-hmm. I am fascinated to hear, having been married, like got married a couple of years, well, a year and a half ago, and knowing all the dramas that come with that, like, how was that as an experience?
Oh, it was one. It was my dream job. It really was. So when I was younger, I'd always wanted to be a wedding planner. I mean, I never thought I was going to be a matchmaker. Didn't know what they were. I'd always wanted to be a wedding planner. And so I worked for this gorgeous venue in Surrey called Great Foster's. And again, the clientele was similar to what I work with now. You know, it's a beautiful venue and the price tag is attached. And I was a wedding planner there for a number of years. And it's really quite transferable skills. It's, you know, it's getting to understand someone and their culture and their background and their what's important to them and what will represent them and be a match for them. So you know, you talk about colour schemes and things like that. That's almost sort of surface level. But the more you get to know them, you can understand what works and what doesn't resonate. And what I really used to like is throughout the journey, you'd meet the bride and the groom first. And as you got closer to the wedding, you'd have more meetings and you'd then meet their family, the parents. Invariably, they might be paying. So they might be involved very early or they might be involved a bit more down the line. But at some point you meet them. And that was when I'd get a real insight into that relationship. And we'd all sit in the room, we'd discuss things. And you'd have the groom's parents and the bride's parents. And in my head, I would decide if this wedding was going to work or not, the marriage. And there were some of them where I would think, oh, this is just, look at the similarities and the, you know, almost like they were almost mirror images of each other. And I'm not saying that opposites don't attract, but we use this very much in our matchmaking. We're not like the drop-down menus of online dating where you tick a box if you play tennis or if you tick a box if you go to the gym 3 times a week and the algorithms will match you on that. I don't really care how many times you go to the gym. Doesn't mean that I'm going to know who you get on with. It's all about where you come from, what was your upbringing, who are your role models in life, your parents. What are the morals and values? And you can see that when you meet with people, and particularly when you meet with families together. And I could see the ones where they had synergy, and I could see the ones where I would think, spending a lot of money because this marriage is going to have 2 years.
Oh my God. And what, did you find yourself to be right?
I used to stalk them. Because if they don't really come back to you and say, unless they say things like, oh, I'm coming back for our 5-year anniversary or something like that. But yeah, they'd rarely come back and say, yeah, you know, you planned our wedding and we spent $50,000 on it. Well, we're divorced and it's lasted 18 months. It's not going to happen. So I would dig and find out for myself. And just to see if I was right or not. It would be really interesting. I'd do my own little pool of secret research. But I found it really transferable when I started matchmaking. The reason I stopped being a wedding planner is because I was married and I got divorced. Mm-hmm. So all these happy couples would skip in and there'd be me being a bit bitter and a bit cynical and raining on their little happy parade. So it was a friend that had said, you're not really serving these people to the best of your ability. Why don't you go hang out with the single people? And, you know, just take your misery there. So that's how it started. And then I randomly seen an advert for a matchmaking agency. I think there's so much of serendipity and universe and things like that. Even though I run an agency where I give relationships that proactive nudge, I think things happen for a reason. And I find that with my members, the amount of synergy in their lives and points of their life where they should have crossed paths with each other. And actually it's taken coming to the agency for it to happen. The stories are There's numerous of them, too many for it to be a coincidence. I always think that our members should have met each other at some point. The universe has tried to make it happen, and modern society's thwarted it all. And then we're the ones that just, yeah, push it over that finish line.
Oh, I love that. And actually, I really relate with what I do as well, like the synchronicity and the synergy and just being, you know, just helping things along a little bit. I really relate to that.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of got its natural course, and we're just making sure that, you know, we're steering it in the right direction, not letting people be distracted. And modern society has been a real, I think, a real distraction to all of that. You know, people would meet at work because they would be surrounded by their peers who they had lots of similarities with. They probably come from similar education backgrounds. They probably achieved similar degrees. They've gone to their similar drives and motivations. There was so much criteria and morals and values and drive and things like that that were similar, and that's how things would naturally happen. But now you can't meet at work. It's career suicide. That option's out. Or social circles, you know, you'd meet because you were at weddings and it would be the bride's friends and the groom friends, and invariably they'd be similar people and they'd have similar groups of friends. You might meet, you know, it's all just this natural way of doing things. And modern society means we don't meet at work anymore. We don't really socialise that much anymore. We're all really busy and we've just got our blinkers on and we don't see the wood for the trees. And the things that should organically and naturally happen don't. And you have to be proactive. I mean, I'm hoping one day it will come back full circle, as most things do. Mm-hmm. Actually, when it does, I'll be out of work, so maybe I'm not. But for the moment, I really do believe that we're just sort of orchestrating things that should naturally be happening.
Yeah.
Proactive in making that happen as it should do.
Yeah, I love that. I really relate. So, okay, now let's break down something that I know the listeners of this episode will be interested to hear your perspective on. So what are some of the most common bad habits or practices you see in your women clients engaging in when it comes to dating?
Oh, it's the usual that you read about in all the books, the podcasts, having a list, a type. The amount of people that come to me, and they've all had relationships. Many of our members are divorced. Many of them have had a long-term relationship. You know, it's something they want. It's something they've experienced before, just with the wrong person. And it's normally other areas of their lifestyle that's preventing them doing it, such as busy careers and not giving it the focus and consistency it needs. But many people, men and women, will come to me and say, well, this is my type. And I think, oh, you're single, so that's not working, is it? That's your type and that's what you keep doing and repeating that pattern. It's not working. I suppose it's hard to hear that. I don't deliver it quite so bluntly, but it is true. And it's not to say everything isn't working. There's just an area that needs tweaking. That's what we discover. And I tend to find when people are dating, they stick to a comfort zone because it's your emotions and it's quite daunting. You know, you're putting yourself out there. It's not the most comfortable. So what you tend to do is stick to what you know, and you just keep doing the same bloody thing all the time. What you know. And you end up in these relationships and you think, how am I in the same relationship with the last guy that I broke up with? He's doing the same things. And you are choosing that, you know, and you're doing it because it's comfortable. There's nothing wrong with it. There's no judgment, but it's almost like we are breakers of the pattern in a way. And if you leave people to their own endeavors, especially the older you get, the smaller your social circle gets, the more you try and control and you stick to your comfort zone still, it's really hard to put yourself out there to something that you haven't experienced before. And it's not, we don't sail wildly outside of our circles with our members. We look at what their criteria is and we just try and tweak certain areas just to see what works. And I tend to find our greatest successes lie on the periphery of people's comfort zones. And they're too scared to go there. They're just too scared to go there. But with our support, and with the same with you, with our support, with us being a safety net, holding their hand and guiding them, they don't have the fear to try it. And that is where the success lies all the time. I've gone slightly off tangent with the question there, but
no, that was perfect. And I'm nodding along furiously here because I completely relate. It's and actually, even when I think back to meeting my husband, you know, it's funny now because it may, like, when I said to my friends, he will never be my boyfriend. This is just a little bit of a little very short summer romance. And they were like, what are you talking about? It makes complete sense. But because for me, what was hard was that he was so available. And that sounds ridiculous now. And that's what I see such a common thing with the women I coach is we are addicted to the emotionally unavailable ones who look very impressive. Yeah. But actually, the minute you get someone who treats you well, who wants to see you and is available, it gives you the ick. And it's really uncomfortable to stay, like to stay around when you get the ick. But I think that I want to know your thoughts on the ick, because I assume that probably comes up.
It does. Fair bit. Yes, it really does. And it's not to dismiss them at all. There are, you know, we have members where they will go on a date and maybe that first spark isn't there on that first occasion. That's fine. You know, it's not, our members aren't 21, it's eyes catching across the dance floor. This is a different way of dating. It's getting to know someone. I see it as back to front dating in a way. So if you do see someone across, you know, at the bar, you think, are you attracted to them? And then you want to know, are they single? What do they do for a living? What's their relationship history? What are their hobbies and interests? What are their aspirations for the future? You've got a tick list of things you're running through and you're thinking, I hope I'm ticking all of these because I fancy this guy. With us, it's almost a reverse. You meet someone and all of those aspects, all those criteria, they're tucked up your sleeve. There's no secret love child and date four or anything like that. You've got all the foundations and the groundwork there. You're going to meet them and see if you're attracted and the chemistry's there. And you don't know that till you meet someone in person. So, but what it can be is down the line, you meet them a couple of times and there are so many different things that, you know, we all have our idiosyncrasies and our nuances. It can be as silly as the way someone cuts their food and holds their cutlery. People just somehow can't bear it. Or it's the way they breathe. Or it's, you know, these are just things that we all individually have. And I slightly thrive on them because if everyone was really easygoing and just, if I just want that really kind, nice person, they'd figure it out themselves. They wouldn't need me. So yeah. People having nuances and criteria is important, but there is a point where you have to recognize, is this something that is surmountable with all the other aspects that are in place? So I tend to find there are things like age, height, and location that are deal breakers for people. And I do understand that, but you know, if you meet someone and everything else is there, you can envisage that future. And the fact that they are perhaps an inch shorter than you wanted, is that going to be a deal breaker? Or the fact that actually I really like dark head men and he's kind of blonde, with a man, he's going to lose his hair, it's going to turn grey quicker anyway. So is this a deal breaker when every other box is ticked? And, you know, sometimes it is, and that is what it is. But it's, yeah, it's sort of recognising what the ick is, and if it's insurmountable and you are just not going to tolerate it for the next 2-3 decades that you are potentially going to have a relationship together, or if they are, you know, have the potential to be a great father, if they are, their family is like yours, if you just are on the same wavelength, if you finish each other's sentences, if you are just, if everything is there and you're meant to be, is the fact his hair is a certain different color as per your requirement list, is it going to be a deal breaker or not?
Well, on that note, I'm curious to know what some of the worst dating advice you've heard, especially for kind of your type of clients. Can you think of any?
Some of the worst dating advice. I'm going back to the friends thing a little bit. I tend to find it really difficult when, particularly for women, when their friends get involved. So this brings me to a story of a lady who, she's beautiful. She's been in a great relationship for a couple of years with someone now through us. And the amount of time she calls me just every few months just to say, thank you so much. We've just got back from Switzerland. You know, I'd never have met this person if I was left to my own devices, and just somehow it works. Anyway, the issue that we had with matching with someone is that I tell her about someone over the telephone and she'd be really excited. And I'd share the profile and the photograph by email. And she'd take overnight and she'd come back and go, no, sorry, not for me. And I think, what's changed in those last 24 hours? It was like a dead cert. We were going ahead. And this must have happened 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. And in the end, I was like, right, tell me what happens. Well, I do this. You go away for 24 hours. What happens in that time period? She's like, I send the details and I tell my friend about him. And I was like, interesting. What's your friend saying? She said, no, it's not good enough. For me, I deserve better. I can do better. And I was like, well, of course, I think that of all my clients. Of course, they you know, they're amazing. They're fantastic. They deserve the best person. And I was like, tell me about your friend. Well, what's she? Well, she's my close single friend. We do everything together. And I was like, what's your friend going to be doing? And, you know, her friend was a great friend, obviously. And they've been together for years. And they've known each other for decades. But this friend subconsciously was sabotaging.
Yeah.
Because if this, my client's future was set and was going happy, hers, what was she going to do? Yeah. So she would be subconsciously sabotaging this lady's relationship. So I sent this gentleman and I said, I feel we've missed about 10 opportunities here, but let's just get back on track. Do not call your friend. Like, I'm no disrespect to your friend. Don't call her. Just, can you just hear my voice and just trust me on this one occasion and just go with this gentleman? They've been in a relationship for years now. They just send me the most amazing messages. And she does send me messages saying, I don't think I'd have done this without you literally saying to me, don't call my friend up. And I'm not saying that everyone's friend is bad. I don't say that at all. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if you have too many voices coming at you, and it can be family wanting a certain thing for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, has he got enough money? Could he be the great, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There could be a friend with a different angle. There could be someone else going, oh yeah, but you're, you know, this in your career and he's this. So that doesn't feel a fit. Suddenly all these little voices in your head make you forget what actually is true to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, some of the worst dating advice comes from outside sources. And I'm not saying don't talk to people around you or don't trust them, but don't let them overshadow your voice and what you think. And I think as women, we can be quite impressionable to other people's ideas and thoughts and making decisions slightly based on what we think other people will think about us. Men don't seem to have that issue.
No, that's such a good point. And I think it's something that doesn't get talked about nearly enough. And I, thinking back again, when I met my husband, a big part of it was, what are my friends going to think?
Mm.
And actually, the friends I was thinking of, they're not such good friends anymore. I might still know them, but you know, maybe they were kind of quite superficial, and I like was really worried about what they would think. Friends who really know me and really love me saw how happy he made me, and this is the most important thing, how myself I was around him. I wasn't performing, I wasn't putting on a show, I was completely myself. So you heard it here, guys. Don't necessarily go and take everything like that your friend says as gold, because also your friend is bringing their own baggage in.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're friends with people because of that relationship, friend's relationship. That doesn't mean those people should have complete control over your other relationships. I have different groups of friends. My relationship with certain friends is different to that with other friends.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to be the same. It's just, yeah, just sort of stay true to yourself and don't lose what your thoughts are. So yeah, that would be the advice that, and I'm really conscious of it with my friends. You know, I'm 45, I have friends that have been married, I have friends that are going through divorce. And a lot of people ask my advice. And I know that I know them from decades ago. And there's my advice sort of as a matchmaker and there's my advice as a friend. And it is different. It is. And I have to bite my tongue, make sure that I'm delivering the best advice and not doing things from a place where it's about me and not about them.
Yes. Brilliant point. So yeah, don't forget that one. I always say to clients, like, get to know this guy on your terms. Mm. And I do think, you know, it's important at some point to get a sense of how they interact with your friends and family. For me, that it's not necessary for everyone, but for me that was important, but only when I was very clear about where I stood.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Oh God, yeah, that's the relationship path, isn't it? You get to know someone first. You don't just introduce them to your parents on date one, do you?
Yeah.
Or your friends, you know, you get to know them first and you sort of feel if it's going to fit. And then it is a test as to, I'm going to bring them out to a social occasion, and you probably start with a small group and then it might be a friend's wedding or something like that, where mm-hmm. it's big and it's kind of a display of a relationship. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's just the normal path. So mm-hmm. it's amazing how people slightly lose sight of that. I think it's...
Yes.
And maybe it's old-fashioned rules or guidelines, but they work.
Yeah, they do. I love it. So going in a slightly different direction now, but one that is very relevant to this conversation, is dating apps. Okay, so, you know, they're sort of AI matchmaker of sorts. And what I'm interested in, given that you're a matchmaker, like, what are the issues with dating apps? Like, why might it be better to get a matchmaker that you pay for, a significant investment, when you can join a dating app for free or for a small fee?
Yeah. So I have a certain theory about dating apps. It's to do with the business model. So dating is a business, you know, and it's a big business and it's a growing one. Dating apps, dating sites, things are based on subscription. So the business model is a subscription. So you pay for a month, or you can pay for 3 months, 4 months, or 5 months. They want your money to keep coming. And if you've got two people doing that and they meet each other, they both stop their subscription. If you do that 10,000 times, your business model is shot. So it is in the interest of the dating app and the dating sites to not lose their business model and their subscription and their drip feed of money. I know this is maybe a little bit of a controversial theory, but for example, our business model is our members pay an upfront fee. They join for an annual membership. If I can get them in a relationship in 2 months, brilliant. The business model is I'm incentivized to do this in a quick, efficient, successful manner where they're not coming back. It's set and we've taken the time to match them with the right person. It's going to work and off they go into the sunset. So it's almost like the algorithms, they match you to a certain extent and then they miss. And then they miss, because if they're just missing all the time, you're going to pay again for next month. Well, it seems so close. Let me just try again. And then even if you get into a relationship and you pause it, the business model is that every 3 months, so they're sending you pictures. Look at these new people that have joined us. Here is this array of lovely new people.
Across the screener.
Are you sure you don't want to come back and have a look and just have a little dabble and what's on there? And then you're hooked again. And then it's the swiping and the scrolling and it's another month gone by and you're paying another subscription. The business model is to keep you engaged. The worst thing a dating app can do if you're paying a monthly subscription is to match you.
Isn't that scary? That's so scary. What I, again, another similarity I'm hearing with both of our work is that it, you know, from a purely business perspective for yourself and myself, it serves me for my clients to have great relationships, you know? It serves me and my business for them to, I don't really love the term happily ever after, but to get, you know, from my perspective, get healthy in their love life, like really work on it so that they're attracting better people and supporting them with how they communicate and all the bits that I do. But my business is purely built really on reputation.
And all service businesses are. That's our main thing. And if you lose that, you lose your business. It's the same with us. So we get over 80% of our members through personal referral. That hasn't been an overnight thing. It's taken me that's really only been working really well for me in the last few years. So that's taken me a good decade to get to that point. There's no way I'd risk it. There's no way I'd take on someone where I know that I can't match them or they're not a fit for our sort of portfolio of clientele, because I would damage the service, I would damage the reputation, and that costs a lot more than a membership fee. Service businesses are based on reputation entirely. So you have to make sure you do what you say you're going to do and you deliver to that, because then, you know, in the nature of what we do, my members will tell their friends and their loved ones and they will come to us. The whole thing works full circle. It's all about recommendation. God, that's always at the forefront of our minds.
Well, on that note, what would you say is the worst part of being a matchmaker?
Oh, the worst part is, I think it's the fact that if people think we are complete magicians. So I've mentioned this to you before, with our portfolio of members, they are deliberately curated. So they're very similar. It's the same with apps as well. Everyone's filtering because it's so hard to do the needle in a haystack search. It's the probability of finding someone is very small and slim. So we deliberately work with a portfolio of members who are all very similar. And that's because there is instant compatibility. I honestly think, hand on heart, I could match any of my members together, you know, within that sort of reasoning of age and things like that, and they would get on with each other. They would. They're all very similar people. It astounds me they haven't met in their everyday life. They're all members of the same clubs. They hold at the same resorts. They work at the same companies. I'm like, how are you not meeting each other? So where was I going with this? Hold on. Oh, the worst part of it. Sorry. So we deliberately have the foundations and the groundwork for all of our members. But what I can't do is guarantee chemistry and spark. And that's the thing. When people come along and think I have that magic potion, I would love it. I've mentioned to you earlier, I would go around sprinkling it on George Clooney and Brad Pitt and they would be with me. They're not. We do a lot and we increase our members' chance of success hugely beyond what the other availability is to them. But I am not a magician. I can't make someone love someone. And that's the hardest thing. I find it hard. I send two people on a date and think, oh my God, shall I just go and buy a hat? Because this is obvious. Mm-hmm. And then if it isn't, I'm like, what? Well, why didn't you mm-hmm. love each other? I can't make that part happen as much mm-hmm. as I wish I could. But I can do, I can make sure I'm getting as far as possible with every other aspect. But that magic, that chemistry, that attraction, that spark that can just be summed up in so many different entities of things and is individual to yourself. I can't magic that. That's the worst
thing. Yeah. I totally hear that. For me, it's definitely that I can't control. Like, I'm like, here are the tools. These are habits, behaviors, how to show up as well as you can on a date. I can't control what the person you're dating does, but I can make sure that if you do this and you show up like this, that you're putting your best foot forward. But sometimes, like, I can't control. Sometimes I get clients who they want to work on their love life, but they're too scared to actually go and date. And I can't make them do that. And I can't control how they show up and whether they actually take on board my tips. And it's infuriating because I sometimes think if I could do the date for you, I would. Like, I used to tutor, I probably shouldn't say this. And there were times back in the day, long time ago, where I may have helped with their coursework a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Oh, it is very naughty. Yeah. And I thought if I could sit your exam, I would, which doesn't actually help them in the long run. And I've definitely seen that. So for me, as and probably you as well, it's like, it's just accepting we can only control so much. And we like in the way that our clients have to, you know, they can't control the chemistry, neither can we. We can't control what our clients do. We can just do the best we can.
Yeah, there have been times when people are going on a date and I know it's 30 at 6 o'clock and they're going to be at this venue and I think maybe I'll just go sit at a table. And when the lady goes to the toilet, I'll just go in and give her a few tidbits and make sure she's going back out there. And I think, no, God, there's something third wheel on their date, hey? It crosses my mind a number of times.
Yeah.
They're just down the road from me. I could just drive past and pop in. No one would know.
Has he seen you? I love it. Well, so the opposite side of it, and I imagine that it's going to be quite similar for us here, but what is the best part of your work?
Oh, it's like we were having this discussion with the team yesterday. It's like a dopamine high. You know, you come in on a Monday, you know someone's met on a Saturday and they just send a message saying, it went brilliantly, it's amazing, I've been smiling from ear to ear, and you're just like, oh, it's like it's happening to you.
Yes.
It's fantastic. It really is.
So good, isn't it? It's so good. I just get texts. And I really love this because sometimes clients of mine meet when they're doing my program, Love for Leaders. But a lot of the time it's just after, or everyone's different. So I have to, one of the first things I have to tell them, and I don't know if it's similar for you, because you said, you know, sometimes they'll meet within 2 months, sometimes it takes longer. So clients will come in and having seen these incredible testimonials, and I'm just like, listen, you're on your own journey. You have to release the timeline of how and when this is going to go for you, because I cannot tell you as much as I would love to say. I can guarantee within 3 months, but I can't, and that's not how life works.
Yeah.
But when I get messages, I'll get often texts with a picture of a baby scan or a diamond ring, and it's so beautiful. And I've just got like a little album of all these client wins, and it's like you said, absolute dopamine hit.
Yeah, I have the same. I have a file, and it sounds really creepy, of people's wombs with their babies.
Scary, is that?
Yeah. At the moment, my favourite ones are my older generation. So we start at 30 and we go up to, in recent years, we've got members that are in their 80s. I mean,
I love that.
I know, it's so cute. So cute. And I had this lovely couple who got married in September, and she's 76 and he's 79. And there's a photo, and it's them and all of their grown up respective children and grandchildren. It's just like, oh, there's just, my cup runneth over. This is just,
I love that.
What I need.
My oldest client's been in, I've had a client in their 60s, but I'm like, listen, if you're listening and you want to work on your love life and you're in your 80s, 90s, maybe you're even 100, I am like up for it.
Oh yeah, I'm here for that. I'm totally here for that. I mean, our majority age group, 40s, 50s, 60. But yeah, I love the older ones. They're my favourite heartwarming stories at the moment. Yeah, it is. It's hard work. God, it's hard work. And it's emotional. You know, you don't switch off. I mean, it's not like, oh, it's 5:30 on a Friday, I'll forget it. You know, but on a Saturday night, I'm fully thinking, okay, I've got these 10 people meeting these, and I've got those and those, and then they're just in my mind all night. Yeah, it's, you don't switch off from it, and that can be quite emotionally draining, and you're fully invested in these people and their success is your success. But yeah, the when it all comes together and works, oh, it's just fantastic. It really is. I wouldn't do anything else.
Yeah, completely there with you. So as we start to wrap up, we have what I call the home straight questions, like a lightning round. And the goal is just to not think about it and just say the first thing that comes out of your head.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So first question, Hayley, what love life advice would you give to your 15-year-old self?
Oh, 15-year-old self would be just don't take things too seriously. I don't think, I mean, it's so rare that you would meet the love of your life at 21 and you just, you change yourself to try and make everything work. Don't change yourself. Don't try and be something or not to, and think that that's what you have to do to keep hold of someone. God, yeah. Wouldn't we all love to go back and just have a little word in our ears about that sort of stuff. Mm. I think you have to go through it though, to meet the right person. It's when I have clients that come up, God, I'm not doing this quick fire, am I? I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Keep going.
When I have clients that come along and, it's they haven't been through heartbreak or a relationship, but you know, they're just kind of rites of passage. They really are.
Yeah.
All of them are stepping stones to get to the right place. Mm-hmm. But the overanalyzation, the thought that, oh my God, if I don't get these GCSE results, I think my life is over. If I don't, you know, end up marrying my boyfriend at 18, I'm on the shelf. I look back now and I think, what an idiot. What were you thinking? But you can't see that far ahead. You're so in the present moment. Yeah.
The gift of hindsight, eh?
Yeah. I have members coming to me like 21, 22 asking to, and I'm like, no, go traveling.
Yeah.
Don't be in a relationship. Go be yourself. Yeah. Go somewhere, explore. Yeah. I'm not taking you on, I refuse. I've been really hard about that.
Yeah. No, I like that actually, that you, I didn't know that. I don't think that you took people on from 30, but that makes sense because it's like, you should know yourself to, and been through some stuff by that point, because that's also how people, you know, that's how you create connection is through, you know, when I met my husband at a festival, we were talking about the hard stuff we've been through, you know, it was deeper than just like, oh yeah, everything's great in my life and tick, tick, tick. You know, it was actually the vulnerability that we connected over. And that's such an important piece. And you can only get to that when you've got some stories to tell, when you've lived some life.
Yeah. And people do this whole, they come with baggage, or is it life experience? And
yeah.
Does that just mean that they've learned a lesson and, you know, you don't want like a puppy that you have to train. You've got someone that's experienced responsibility and commitment and heartbreak and has learned the lessons from it and is going to do better next time and use that to their advantage.
Yeah.
It's good. You've got to have that life experience for it to work, without a doubt.
Absolutely. Okay. Next question. What's one thing people may be surprised to know about you?
God, I can't think of anything. I'm not that interesting. I'm 45. I run a business. I have two different offices. I manage a team. I have three young children that range from 3 to 10. A lot of people do sort of hear that and think, how are you doing all that? And I'm like, well, I just thrive on the adrenaline.
Okay. Well, that, yeah, for me, I don't know how you do that because I don't have any kids. I have a very sort of needy dog. But that for me is really like incredible because it's a lot. You do it, like to do what you do and run your life is an awful lot. So good for you.
I try not to stop and think about it. If I do, I think I might go, oh God.
Yeah. Don't think about it. Just keep going.
Just keep swimming.
So before I ask my last question, where can people find out more about your work? And is there anything significant that you want to mention?
So you can go to our website, which is all the W's, Bowes, B-O-W-E-S hyphen L-Y-O-N partnership.co.uk. And that gives you a wealth of information about how we work and the type of people that we work with. We are all the most friendly, the most lovely team of matchmakers. We have heart and passion and soul in what we do for our members. I have people that I married 10 years ago and I still go meet them for lunch and a drink. And it's lovely. We become trusted confidants to hundreds of thousands of people. But we're a safe pair of hands when our members come to us and we really care about our clientele. It's, yes, I run a business, but we don't, you know, unless we have that reputation and that we're known for our customer service and our caring. And the fact that our members stay in touch with us years after we've delivered the service they were looking for, I think is testament to that.
Absolutely. And I can completely vouch for what a wonderful team all of you are. I've come in a few times and you're just great. And we'll pop that link in the show notes too, so you can go and check it out there. So final question, Hayley, what is your number one piece of advice for any single women who are listening, who are killing it in their career, but really struggling in their love life?
I think, and it's almost advice I give myself based on that last question, you can't do it all. You really can't. So if something is important to you, like your personal life, and you're not finding the time and the energy to do it, it sounds a little bit crass, outsource it. When we are becoming that sort of, that nation of outsourcing like America was 10 years ago, but it's because we can't do it all. And careers are important. You don't have to take your eye off the ball to be able to find your personal life, but it is a struggle to find that balance. You know, if you want to have a fit and healthy lifestyle and you're struggling to find that time to exercise, you don't know what you're doing, you'd hire a fitness expert. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. It's not about making life harder for yourself. Make it easier and the jigsaw puzzles fall into place, and there are services and people that want to help people make their lives better. And we're just one tiny aspect of that. So, I mean, I would love to say, because I have this sort of romanticism, that people will bump into each other on the street, or, you know, we'll take a promenade around the park, like in Jane Austen, and just bump someone and, oh my God, then we marry them. That's lovely. It just doesn't work like that. And how long do you wait for it? We just, in this day and age, we need to give things a proactive nudge. Otherwise, we don't do them. And then we start a New Year's resolution, and then we're in the same place next year because we haven't actually done anything proactive about it. So write down what you want and work out your quickest, slickest way of achieving that goal and go and do it.
I love that. The action piece is so, so important. Nothing changes unless we do and we take some different action. Yeah. What a brilliant note to end on. You've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much, Hayley. Really appreciate having you on here.
Thank you. It's been a joy. Lovely to chat. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope this episode served you and gave some practical insights and strategies around the next steps in transforming your love life from the inside out. Do come and let me know over on Instagram what resonated for you the most and why. I am @PersiaLawson. And if you want more tips and tools on how to become a vibrational match for the powerful, committed relationship that you deserve, check out my book, Love is Coming, as well as my programs and coaching containers over at PersiaLawson.com. This website is also linked in this episode's show notes. And if you got value from this episode, I'd be so grateful if you'd like, subscribe, share, and or leave a quick review. This helps the podcast rank higher so it can reach other women who want or need the support. And to have your question answered, send it over to podcast@persialawson.com and we'll get to it ASAP. Until next time, I want you to remember that love is coming for you. But in the meantime, it's your responsibility to stop looking outside of yourself for the partner you want to get and start looking inside of yourself for the partner you want to be.